Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. A 111-96 victory for the New York Knicks over the San Antonio Spurs. RJ Barrett, Alex, scoring a point per minute in what was another fantastic outing for him.
Yeah, RJ Barrett, another big game. Bang, Broadway Barrett. We also are going to talk about the game itself. This is a really encouraging game for the Knicks, hopefully to be followed by more encouraging games. But, you know, a lot of great things to look forward to in this show as far as Emmanuel Quickley and a number of the other players that contributed. Quentin Grimes, really sneaky good game. And Julius Randle only had 2 points, but we're going to tell you why that's not a big deal. So all that's coming up next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down. This is all about back up off the glass. It's good. RJ Barrett.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I want to thank you for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today. And every day, we are now available on all platforms, including on YouTube. And you know that if you're seeing our smiling faces, because the Knicks got a big win, so plenty of reasons to smile. But before we get into all that, I am Gavin Shaw, a play-by-play broadcaster, booking it off to the Basketball Hall of Fame to broadcast some of the best high school teams in America this week. You can check that out on Flow Hoops. He is Alex Wolf, editor-in-chief of The Strickland, the finest Knicks website on the internet. Check out their array of fantastic writers, podcasters. It really is the place to be if you're looking for Knicks coverage. At MSG was the place to be tonight as the New York Knicks walloped the San Antonio Spurs 111-96. It was a close game for a half, but a certain Canadian, Alex, changed all that, putting his stamp on this game, continuing a hot run of play. 31 points in 31 minutes for RJ Barrett. This may be the best in a string of recent fantastic performances by him.
Yeah, you know, we ran the numbers. We did the extremely advanced calculations prior to this, since Basketball Reference hadn't updated yet. He's averaging 23.33 points per game on 50.5% from the field over his last six games. I mean, pretty fantastic stuff. You know, if you take out the 13-point game against Boston, too, that becomes even more impressive. But, you know, you leave the good with the bad. You know, it's a good six-game stretch regardless of the 13-point out. Outing there. So that kind of just underscores how good he's been lately. I think that in this game, he settled himself down nicely, which is good. You know, I thought that things were starting to look a little eh for him at the beginning. You know, it almost looked sort of like that Boston game in a way. He sort of got ate up by Jakob Poeltl a couple times on the inside, trying to go for layups or dunks. You know, he missed what could have been a really crazy alley-oop somewhat early on. And, you know, it seemed like those sort of things can, you know, as even keel as RJ is, kind of derail his confidence from time to time. But then, ironically enough, gets another opportunity for a dunk. He did not mess that one up. Gets a really nice transition opportunity in, I think, the second quarter, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was late first. But either way, gets it out on the break, busts out a windmill. We haven't seen that since maybe like the Rising Stars game, his rookie year, I think. I don't know. It's been a little while. But so he busts that out. So much fun. And, you know, then goes on to have just a masterful performance in the second half, showing off all the best things about his game right now. You know, the shooting, the getting inside and finishing. I got to just give an appreciation once again for like what's becoming his new pet move here. He had it happen just like it's happened with Miles Turner, and like it happened with Robert Williams, where he attempted a righty layup on the inside, you know, after kind of getting by them, and had it stuffed. And then moments later, got another opportunity to go at them. And instead of doing the same exact thing and expecting a different result, instead, you know, drives in, does this like very smooth pivot move. And then that's either resulted in a up and under for RJ, or he pulls back and does a little fadeaway. In the case of today, did a little fadeaway over Jakob Poeltl, made a nice 2-point shot there. I love that he's starting to learn from his mistakes in game and also has counter moves ready to rock that he feels confident enough to bring out during these games. Just a great performance from him. You know, we were talking in the Strickland Discord after the game. A lot of really lofty comparisons came up. As usual, the Jimmy Butler one comes up. I said, and I know that this is very lofty, I'm just saying, like, just for this game, like, he looked like mid to late career Kobe, like the one that is just purely smooth like butter and doesn't really rely on the athleticism as much anymore. He had a lot of that going on in this game, or even like a Brandon Roy, just virtuoso performance for him. I really hope, you know, we've talked about this so many times over the last couple of weeks, but I hope that this now is really that like turning the corner moment for him where he's really starting to, you know, make that big leap that we thought he was going to make earlier in the season before he sort of hit that big slump.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said virtuoso, right? Because I think so often the issue with RJ Barrett is that even when he's playing well, it looks like he's trudging through mud. It seems so difficult. And you go to the final box score and the shooting numbers aren't what you want them to be. The three-point numbers aren't what you want them to be. He missed two more free throws than you'd ideally want. But tonight, it just felt easy. It felt like he had this complete mastery of the game. I thought this was his second best performance of the entire season after the Pelicans game, just because it felt so easy for him. And obviously, look, the Spurs are 23rd in the NBA in defensive rating, not the best group of perimeter defenders. But again, he showed some real pop with that first step. And to me, that is sort of like the pop on the first step and the pop around the rim are the ultimate indicators of who RJ Barrett is going to be as a player. And I thought he had both of them to like the best of his ability that we've seen this season. But it was that he mixed in so much skill that made the game so effective, right? I mean, to your point on the fadeaway and then getting to his mid-range, that little snake dribble. And I thought overall, just a mastery of the pick and roll. And that's something that we spent so many podcasts last season talking about. And it was almost like meeting up with an old friend, getting to see it again, because so often this year, or I guess so infrequently this year, has he had the ball long enough to really get into a rhythm in the pick and roll game. And maybe it was no Kemba Walker tonight. Maybe it was that Julius Randle was willing to take a step back, only scoring 2 points, but this was RJ's show to run. And he got back into that rhythm from last season, rediscovered that form. And that set off so many different parts of his game, like not only getting to the rim, not only getting to the mid range, but his passing too, right? That sick bounce pass where he threw the little pump fake and then hit Taj rolling to the rim, or the cross court feed to Grimes where he kind of hooked it and he threw a frozen rope for Grimes to hit a three. Then defensively, that insane block on Drew Eubanks, maybe my single favorite play of the game, was when he attacked Jakob Poeltl and just ripped a pass across the court, and it set off a swing sequence that ended with RJ relocating back to the corner that he initially drove from to hit a three. It was like he got the drive and the kick on the play. Just a very complete performance for RJ Barrett, Alex. This is about as good as I've seen him and about as comfortable as I've seen him in his entire NBA career.
Yeah, and you know, it's coming about at just the right time, right? The Knicks need these sort of performances out of him if they're gonna, you know, get this season off life support, because we literally just talked about in the last podcast, like, this was pretty much a must-win game for the Knicks, and they have a number of must-win games coming up here, and they really needed this sort of effort out of him. Because, you know, on a night where, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but like, Julius Randle only scores 2 points in this game, it actually wasn't a big deal, because Julius was getting everybody involved and RJ was getting everybody involved, and like, the two players that you want to be the stars on this team were really helping make everybody else better. And that's like really all that matters. Like, you know, if Julius isn't scoring, at least he's getting, you know, Fournier looks, he's getting RJ looks. RJ was scoring in this game and yet still was using that as a catalyst more so than, you know, looking at it just as like, okay, time to go get mine. You know, he was getting his looks, obviously, and he was being assertive when he had to be. But so many times, you know, he would be like, haha, I just scored, you know, basically 6 straight points or whatever. Now, you know, I'm going to run this pick and roll and you're going to get 4 defenders on me and I'm just going to slip it to Taj Gibson for a nice little slip pass in the, you know, for a backdoor cut. So it's so good to see him playing so confidently and just so in control of himself and of the game. It's exactly what we want to see out of him. And like, if he can keep this going, then as I just said a minute ago, we might be looking at finally the star turn that we've been looking for, you know, more so than just like, oh, is RJ going to turn out a role player, or is he not? Or, you know, is he basically just going to be 3 and D? Like, we know we can get that out of him at his best or whatever. No, like, these sort of games show you that there is something much greater below the surface there, and it's all just going to be about harnessing it. And, you know, no better time than the present to start harnessing that and just carry it through the end of the season, because that would be not only great for the Knicks, but great for RJ and his future contract as well, because he is up for an extension this summer. So lots of different things are going into RJ's play right now, and he's coming through at just the right moment for the Knicks.
Yeah, I just going to note very quickly, me, it's all about, can he do it against the best defenses in the NBA in close games? Like, who are his four 30-point games against this year? Twice against the Spurs, once against a very depleted Pacers team, and then once against a Pelicans team. That's apologies to Locked On Pelicans host Jake Madison. Pretty pathetic this year. So he, like, the next step is can he do this in the biggest games? But to be clear, this is a massive step forward, him doing this against anyone, because like weeks ago we were questioning, can this guy get it together? Does he have anything left? Like, because he was horrible for basically the whole month of December. And we're getting added credence to the idea that he was just sick, because he's been really, really good since getting healthy and also since finding a role in the offense. But that is a bigger picture conversation that we're going to talk about after we tell you about Bet Online. Bet Online would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. It's a new year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the game starts. And with that, we are back, Alex, on Locked On Knicks. Once again, a massive win for the New York Knicks over the San Antonio Spurs. It was a little sloppy in the early going. It was a lot sloppy in the early going. Felt like a very quintessential 2021-2022 Knicks game, in that they were playing a team that they had far more talent than, but just didn't bring the necessary intensity to put the foot down. And I was in my mind thinking the whole first half, oh man, we're going to have another one of those games where it just comes down to the wire, or at least part of me was thinking that. And the other part of me, it felt sort of similar to like the last Celtics-Knicks game, where the Celtics just felt like they had way more talent and the game was close at halftime, but everyone just sort of had the same feeling, all right, in the second half, this team is going to run away with it. That was also part of my feeling, because the Knicks, I thought, had good flow offensively. They just, for whatever reason, couldn't put it all together, weren't hitting quite enough shots, but then the second half really, really, really separated in this game. And it was all about balance, right? It wasn't just RJ Barrett.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the best contributors in this game other than RJ was Emmanuel Quickley, I think, you know, getting things going for the Knicks off the bench and, you know, coming through with some of the big shots that we've become accustomed to, but more importantly, sort of running the offense. And between he and Quentin Grimes, 12 assists off the bench, 6 assists each. I mean, Grimes very sneakily, mostly on those sort of plays like what you described in the last segment, the like swing plays, you know, was just kept making the right read of making that extra pass, finding Evan Fournier in the corner, RJ Barrett in the corner, or whoever, you know, in the corner to make that perfect open three. And they really found that rhythm in the second half that they didn't have in the first half, where, you know, things were sort of working in the first, but you were also thinking like, they're kind of letting up a little too much on the inside to the Spurs. They're not really, you know, treating this team seriously. It didn't seem like, you know, it seemed like the Knicks were treating them seriously in the sense that they brought, you know, their offense with them to play. But on defense, they seemed like they were kind of like, you know, whatever, the Spurs aren't that good. They're missing a couple players. We should be able to just coast. In the second half, they locked it up on the defensive end and they put it together on the offensive end and really were just so cohesive. And, you know, the point that I wanted to make about the game as a whole, like our good buddy Mark Berman, I love him to death, but after the game was, you know, doing questions, you know, Q&A at the press conference with Tibbs, and asked him like, hey, you know, Tom, Julius, only 2 points tonight. You know, like, what does that mean for you guys? You know, is that, you know, what does that say about this game for him and for you and blah, blah, blah. And Tibbs answered just the right way, and Julius answered just the right way on the court in this game, which was great, where, you know, Tibbs was basically just like, we won the game, so who cares? You know, it's like Julius was doing things that helped us win the game, so whether he scores 2 points or 100, you know, it doesn't matter, because, you know, he's doing things that helped the Knicks win the game. And I was in total agreement. Like, the big thing about this game, Gavin, to me was Julius was out there, only scores 2 points, but, you know, gets 12 rebounds and was rebounding well. Only 3 assists, but, like, I felt like he should have had more. I thought that he was very involved on those swing plays. You know, a lot of times, even though he wasn't shooting well, he only shot 1 of 7 for the game. He was still drawing doubles, and he was passing well out of those doubles. I think there's one or two where he made a questionable decision. I think one of them for sure that I can remember resulted in a turnover. But in the grand scheme of things, was doing a good job of getting the ball going out of those and getting everybody else involved, which then led to huge nights for everybody else in the starting lineup, right? Like RJ Barrett, 31 points, Evan Fournier, 18 points, Burks, 16 points, Mitch, 13 points. And all of those guys shot, other than Fournier, who shot 5 of 12, all those guys shot over 50%, and Fournier shot 4 of 7 from 3. So, like, you'll take that all day. I just thought, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with this game, even though if you would look at the box score, you might think, like, oh, Julius didn't have a good game. This is like a perfect game where the box score can be deceiving. And I thought that he had a perfectly fine, if not good, game, despite putting up one of his more underwhelming box scores, honestly, in like his whole time with the Knicks, as far as just a box score goes.
Yeah, it was, I sometimes think with Julius, like, when he doesn't score a lot, I'm like, oh, it's like he still had a great game and he still picked people apart. Like, I didn't think his actual on the court product was very good, especially early. He was forcing a lot of shots that, like, long twos that there was no need to force. But where I give him a lot of credit, to your point, is that then he pulled off, right? He's like, I don't have it tonight. All these other guys have it. I'm going to reduce what I'm doing. And it's going to benefit everyone else. And that's what allowed RJ to get in rhythm. That's what allowed pretty much everyone to get in rhythm. And I thought Mike Breen, I guess this was before the game, but I hadn't heard it, referenced this fantastic quote from Evan Fournier, where Evan essentially said, we don't know how we're going to play every night because we basically build our identity around whoever gets hot. And then what happens is we end up continually trying to feed that same guy, and no one else can ever really get into a rhythm. And I thought that was a very astute observation from Evan Fournier, maybe one that we should have made more on this podcast throughout the year. But I thought the timing of it was pretty perfect, because that just wasn't the case tonight. And maybe it was a product of RJ just being ultra efficient, but it didn't feel like any one person was dominating the offense. Like, obviously RJ got the bulk of it, but everything RJ was doing was within flow, right? Because it was so pick and roll based. And not to just take a blind shot at Randall, but I think that's the issue with Randall sometimes, is that even when he's hot, it's so isolation heavy that no one else can really get into a groove. And I think that's essentially what Fournier was saying without specifically calling out Julius Randall. But the great thing about Randall, the first game against the Celtics and a little bit tonight, is that I think the best version of him is a guy who repeatedly draws double teams and then just lets the rest of the team take over. Like, that is the ultimate function for him on this team. And for all the people out there who were saying when Julius had COVID, they were like, see, the offense doesn't work without Julius. They were right to some extent, because the Knicks don't have anyone else who draws an automatic double team like Julius, but it doesn't really work unless Julius is willing to pass out of it and not take crappy shots. Well, I've said Julius about 95 times in a minute, Alex, so I'll throw it back to you. But that's sort of my big takeaway here, is that his presence on the court is absolutely essential, but only if he plays the right way.
I will just say Julius. No, I totally agree. You know, he has to embrace the best parts of his role, which is just essentially, you know, some nights you're going to make the first shot. Like, he literally did. He made his first one from mid range and then didn't make another shot throughout the game. You know, he has to just understand, you know, you're not the type of star that has to shoot a zillion times a night. You know, you can be the type of star that can, you know, just set your teammates up on any given night. You know, like, he doesn't have to be a high volume, you know, 20 shots a night, you got to score 20 or the team's going to lose type of guy, because we've seen that his passing and his ability to, you know, work those double teams and stuff is so good that doesn't matter. You know, it's not like it's score the basket or bust with him. It's, you know, score the basket or make a really good look and find one of your teammates either cutting or out on the perimeter or, you know, what have you. Like, he's got a great sense for finding his teammates when he's at his best. So I definitely think that that's something that he's got to embrace going forward. And I really hope that he does, because, you know, if he starts kind of not caring, it seems a lot like, and this is probably the case for some other guys on the team too. Like, I kind of think Fournier gets like this, where we talk about he needs his offense going or else other parts of his game don't go. You know, I wish that guys could kind of separate themselves from their box score numbers and just sort of just go out there and just play their game regardless and not really be too concerned about like, oh, is the shot falling tonight? You know, if it is, then good. If not, then bad. I'm going to play bad tonight. You know, if they could all just kind of focus more so on just how's the team doing? Like, is the team winning tonight? Because regardless of if I make shots or not, if I make the right passes and if I stay engaged at all times, someone else will be able to pick me up on this team if we can get them going. And that sort of plays into the thing with Fournier's comment, you know, that he had made too, with like not focusing on just getting one player going, focus on getting the whole team going, and then things will go a lot smoother. And I thought that this game was just like a perfect example of that, like top to bottom. Even someone like Obi Toppin, who kind of struggled to find minutes again in this game, you know, even in like the late stages of the game and garbage time, even it was like they were looking to get him going, you know, like he got a couple really fun dunks, which maybe I'll just shout them out real quick. I've already like prepped, if he gets to do the dunk contest again this year, I've already prepped his one dunk in my head, which would be I hope that he's allowed to set up a prop where he could like jump over it. That like double clutch dunk has become like his new like finishing move on the court. And he pulled one of those out today. And I didn't think there was any way he was going to be able to get it done, where like he sort of goes up and then it looked like the defender was too close and he sort of like ducked the ball under and then brought it back up and slammed it. And you had no idea how he got it done in that amount of space. I can already see a thing where he could set up like a little stanchion that he could jump over and like grab the ball and then do like a double pump or something in the air and put that down. That's an easy 50. Just planning that one out while we're thinking about it here.
We got to get you in touch with his agent.
Yeah, really. I mean, who's it? Isn't it Leon's son?
Yeah, there you go. Easy access.
No big deal. Yeah, I'll just call up Leon and just say, hey, Leon, can you ring up your son for me real quick? I got to talk to him about Obi's dunk contest here.
He's a big Locked On Knicks guy, so it should work.
You and I are so well connected to the Knicks.
Yeah. Everyone knows.
But anyway, I've been talking for a minute. I'll throw it to you. I figure we're probably next going to talk about one of Quickley or Grimes, but I'll leave that up to you, or if it's someone else, fire away.
No, you're right on it. Let's go Emmanuel Quickley. I think we'll get to in a sec. I thought he was the opposite of Mitchell Robinson in that I thought Mitch had another night where he had a fantastic box score that was indicated he had a better game than he actually had. I think Quickley was much better than his box score. 12.6 assists, 4 rebounds, 3 turnovers, 1 block, not credited with a steal. But I thought he played, man, I thought he had a fantastic, fantastic game in this one, like a two-way game. Defensively especially, he really stood out to me. I mean, he had one sequence where he basically, I can't remember, I think it was Lonnie Walker. He almost stripped him in midair, but couldn't quite hold on to the ball. And then Walker missed the shot. And then next play, like Walker was almost trying to get revenge on him and just hard drive straight to the rim. And Quickley just like, it's the first time I've ever seen Emmanuel Quickley use verticality where he just went right up in the air and forced a miss. And then had another play. This was, I think, late third, early fourth. Where the Spurs were running a pick and roll with DeJounte Murray and Jakob Poeltl, and Poeltl was rolling to the rim and Quickley just sprinted down, tagged Poeltl. Poeltl threw it out to the perimeter, or maybe it was Murray who threw it out to the perimeter, and then Quickley ran down. I think it was Walker again, just ran out to the wing and got a great contest on the ball. And then offensively, just similar to RJ, showing off all the different parts of his game, like a little drive and kick dish to RJ for a three. Had a mid-range fadeaway, which is a shot I don't think I've seen him take. Did the Nash dribble thing where he like loops around the basket, just turned around and hit a like 7-footer, but it was just so in rhythm. Hit Obi Toppin for this great lob dunk where he threw a hook pass off a live dribble. The dunk that you referenced by Obi was also off a no-look bounce pass that he had. Had a dribble into like between the legs into a nasty pull-up corner three. Like it was just over and over and over again on both ends of the floor. And I think, again, we're really seeing what Tom Thibodeau was referencing the other night with Quickley when he said, this is a guy that I want guiding us through the fourth quarter. He's reliable right now in a way that he hasn't been all season. And I think, Alex, a lot of people are missing it because we're not getting the highs that we got last season, right? Like when he dropped like 20 in the fourth quarter against Portland, that's not really happening as much. But what we are getting is just is consistency from him. And that's the one thing that's been lacking his whole career. We got to see if it keeps up a little bit longer than it has, but it's been a really good 4 or 5 game stretch for Emmanuel Quickly.
Yeah. You know, it's like, he's not getting the, if you want to talk about virtuoso, you know, like that's been like our word of the day. He's not having those like virtuoso scoring performances anymore. He used to be Mr. Point per minute. You know what I mean? Like that was what we referenced all the time last year. He would come in, play 14 minutes, score 14 points, you know, and it was like a nightly occurrence for him practically. We're not seeing that quite as much now. And even when he's sort of, you know, only shooting okay, like in this game, for example, he shot 5 of 12. So like not his best mark ever. You know, you'd like to see a little more than that, but like it didn't matter because he was, you know, still just guiding the team. You know, you realize like the utility of a guy that barely turns the ball over, you know, who's growing in terms of his abilities as a distributor. You know, I think it's becoming obvious, like he's learning his game. He's still not the most advanced ball handler on the planet. So he's not going to like, you know, cross guys out of their shoes all the time. Of course, he'll hit some step backs like that sometimes, you know, and step back some guys out of their shoes. But, you know, he's not necessarily like doing side to side dribbles, that sort of thing, and rocking guys to sleep. But, you know, he's doing point guard things, you know, that you want to see out of him. He's controlling the defense. He's bending the defense. And he's using it to the advantage of his teammates and finding them in their best spots now. So, you know, there's not really too much more I can ask of him right now. And to your point, like he's increasingly making a case for himself to be on the court on or during fourth quarters and, you know, really be a part of this team's game plan going forward just for that steady hand. And the fact that like when he's out there, you could pretty much count on that trusty 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio because he takes care of the ball and he's doing a good job of, you know, getting everybody on this team involved right now.
Yeah, he was fantastic. So I'll flip to the other end of the coin in Mitchell Robinson. Again, I referenced it. Fantastic box score game, 13 points, 11 boards, 4 of them on the offensive end, 4 blocks, didn't miss any of his 4 shots from the field, got to the line 9 times, made 5 of them, which the way he's currently shooting free throws is honestly a miracle. He kind of looks like he should go 2 for 9 every single night. But I thought, and he look, to be clear, he was really good initially on the offensive end of the floor. Like he was just overwhelming around the basket, like got multiple like cleanup dunks and putbacks and looked really good. But then I was frustrated with his defense on Jakob Poeltl. He just repeatedly would overcommit and he was either giving up offensive rebounds because he would go for a block on a shot that was already over his head, or he would get faked out of his shoes. I mean, Eubanks even caught him one time where he just had like a gross like over pursuit, and then Eubanks just got a layup on him, and it was frustrating because I thought this was a little bit of a regression for Mitch. Like I found myself saying, "Come on, you're better than that." Like this is what he's been working on for 4 years, and especially last season. Like we all talk about the foot speed, and that's obviously the biggest swing factor with him. But mentally, I thought last year he got to a point where he was so good and he just wasn't really making mistakes like that anymore. And tonight, I thought maybe it was just because the Knicks had a big lead and maybe it was because he was playing well on the other end. But I thought there were some mental lapses from him that were frustrating because I think he's sort of gotten past that as a player. That being said, I continue to like where he's at physically, Alex. And I think he's turned a corner in that respect.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you know, tonight was almost one of those nights where if this was a year or two ago, we'd be looking at this like, oh yeah, Mitchell Robinson, part of the young core. Like, this is it, you know, big time player, you know, this guy's going to be so freaking good. Like, you know, he might be the best young prospect on the team, blah, blah, blah. Obviously not in the same game that RJ would score 31 points, but you get what I'm saying. Like, but considering that this is year 4, Mitch, you know, yeah, the little mistakes do need to start getting cleaned up. I did still think that the highs were pretty damn high. And he did a good job of, you know, really, like he's, like you said, I think fully back there physically now. You know, now it's just we got to start seeing the mental progress, you know, as far as how he's going to do, you know, tackling that part of the game and not falling for those fakes and that sort of thing. But, you know, managed to block a jumper in this game, which is like the staple, you know, managed to eat up a couple of drives and like really make like statement blocks like he used to. And, you know, at his best was looking pretty good on the boards, although there was like one or two plays where he didn't look the best in that respect, like lost Poeltl on a box out one time. Our buddy Benji tweeted that one out, you know, a little video of that just saying like Mitch will be the death of me or something like that. Because he, you know, just like he had perfect position on Poeltl and then just kind of like didn't have his arm out far enough to track where Poeltl was and stop him from getting in. And Poeltl just sort of like treated his arm like a turnstile, you know, and just got his way in and got an easy putback. So it's just that little stuff that still needs to get cleaned up for Mitch, but obviously the skills are back there now, you know, and I wonder if he's still sort of mentally getting back to where he was too, after having to miss so much time last year. I mean, he was injured for really the better part of last season. And then obviously had the long layoff and then had, you know, had to basically relearn how to play with his body, and get himself back into proper shape. So maybe there's still a bit of a curve to have here, but I'm glad to see that the highlights are at least looking very Mitch-like again at this point, even if the low lights still aren't fantastic and we want to see those get cleaned up. I want to shout out Quentin Grimes too, though. I thought that he had a really good game, just a smart, smart game. You know, this is just one of those ones where he looked every bit, you know, as good as we think that the Knicks, you know, thought that he was coming out of the draft. Why they saw something that a lot of other people, us included, didn't see coming into the draft, which is just like, this guy just knows how to play basketball. Like, he actually didn't really have it going that well, you know, the shot tonight, like 3 of 7, but only 1 of 5 from three, which I think the one he had like 1 foot on the line or something very close. Like, it was very close to a three. So almost like he made 2 threes, but either way, I mean, you know, just not a great night shooting from there, but he knew that the threat of him shooting from there was real. And he kept just making those nice, you know, the nice reads out of the, you know, the pass to him. If he didn't have a perfect shot, he made the extra pass to get somebody else set up. And that led to him having 6 assists, which has to be a career high, right? Like, he definitely didn't have 6 assists yet this year, right?
No.
I don't think so. Yeah, it's got to be a career high. So send new career high in assists. I'm just going to call it, regardless if I looked it up or not. But yeah, I loved his game, you know, even though he didn't really – he doesn't super pop on the box score, but I thought that what he did in the game just further solidified, like, he had almost 30 minutes tonight. I think he should continue, even once the Knicks get like Kemba Walker back, should still continue having at least like 15 to 20 minutes a night, because he just goes out there. He just makes winning basketball plays. I really like watching him play for that reason.
Yeah, that one play that he had where he did the MJ / Alec Burks like fake reversal where you look like you're going to like pull it back out and then he crossed back in, a little up and under slip pass to Mitch for the dunk. That was absolutely sick. I almost fell off my couch when he did that. That was maybe my single favorite play of the game, despite all the amazing stuff from RJ. And then another one I really liked from him was when Bryn Forbes stole his pass and then he comes back and blocks his three. Like, I just like the attitude from Grimes. Like, it reminds me, like, he obviously is not the same level of talent, but being in Phoenix, this was my junior year of college, was Devin Booker's rookie year. And I went to maybe 20 or 30 Suns games that year. And my main takeaway was like, Devin Booker, like, he won't take crap from anyone, even as like a 19-year-old. And obviously, Grimes a couple years older than that, but I get the same feeling from Grimes where the dude is just a competitor from day one. I wanted to quickly shout out Evan Fournier just because we always make light of it when he has a bad game. So even if he wasn't quite as good as he was against the Celtics, I thought another really good performance from him overall. Obviously the shooting was there, but just the activity level, right? I mean, got Mitch an early dunk just by getting all the way to the rim, even though he missed. He had a relocation three off Julius Randle getting doubled. And to me, that's like if we want to talk about those two potentially not having a good relationship, that's the biggest way to improve that relationship. Fournier being an outlet for him when Randle's in trouble. Had a really nice rip through move into like a step back baseline fade away. I can keep going on specific plays, but the point was he was more active than he has been a lot of times this year on both ends of the floor. And I thought he fit in, which is crucial, right? That's all we're looking for him in the starting lineup. Like stand out, make your plays, but outside of that, like, fit in and don't stand out in the wrong way. And I thought he did a good job of that tonight.
Yeah, and you want to talk about point a minute guys, you know, he almost was right there too. 18 points in 22 minutes. And I mean, you know, that's the type of production you need out of him. You know, maybe he doesn't have to be quite that stark, but, you know, just hitting his open shots and, you know, finding them properly is all he really has to do in any given game and not be a complete turnstile on defense. But like, he did it to a T in this game. And you know what? He only played 22 minutes, but that wasn't an indictment of his play like it has been at sometimes this season where he kind of gets like sat down for the late stage of the game. It was basically just Tibbs just kind of went with the guys that were hot from the third into the fourth quarter And then we were lucky enough to be treated to like 4 or 5 minutes of garbage time, which was nice. So he never really had to come back in. But I guarantee if this is a game that, you know, stayed a little closer towards the end, he would have been back out there because he was a really valuable contributor in this game. But Gavin, this is so nice being able to have a game that we had almost nothing bad to say about. What a day. What a night. I mean, this is wow. Even the Boston game, there was plenty to harp about. The good Boston game, I should say. So this is a treat, but I think I'm pretty much done. I don't have too much more to gush about, and I don't want to keep talking until I eventually find something to not be happy about.
No, I think it was a good point by you when you said that Mitchell Robinson relearned how to play with his body. That was my big takeaway from tonight as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's it for this edition of Locked On Knicks then. Let's end on a happy note. So thank you all for listening. We'll be back with some more shows this week, some more game recaps. It'll be just me or me and maybe some guests because Gavin's taken off to go do Hoop Hall. So again, go check that out. That's Flow Sports. It's called if you want to watch some of the best high school players in the country. And of course, check us out on YouTube if you haven't already. Just a subscription and a couple likes is super useful for us, even if you don't plan on watching the videos. Though maybe you'll look and you'll be like, damn, I can't believe I haven't been watching these guys this whole time. You know, seeing their facial expressions and everything. We're so, so expressionful when we're talking, if that's a word. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll be back. Got a bunch more episodes for you guys this week. Talk to you all soon. Peace out.